So today is the 17th, and let me just say a little bit about what I find striking about this. I said something similar when I was summarizing last week for Pat Kerwin. If you've read at all some collections of ancient writings, such as the Nag Hammadi Library or the New Testament Apocrypha, for example, there are documents that survive that are classified under that heading too. You come to realize that there is a ton that in the late Roman Empire, there was just a ton of stuff circulating. And of course, when the early fathers of the church had to try to figure out what the canonical boundaries of what became the New Testament were, they tried to be critical and they tried to use criteria that would exclude things like late stuff and stuff that was obviously not written by eyewitnesses or even people connected with eyewitnesses or anything like that. But anyway, you have all these other versions of familiar stories swirling around out there. And it turns out that the Quran is very similar to a lot of that because, Muhammad is writing, of course, in Mecca, well, until he fled to Medina. But, there were Christian groups in Arabia and the near environs. There were Jewish groups there, too. Muhammad knows a lot about Judaism and Christianity. And he knows a lot about these stories, and that's what we've been covering, because all of the prophets, all 25 of them, well, 24 of the 25, except for Muhammad, they all have been identified either pretty clearly or else not so clearly with Old and New Testament figures. And so these stories overlap with stories that we're all familiar with from the Bible. So even if one was not interested in Islam, one was just interested in Christianity, one can profit by reading the Quran because there's so much stuff in there that overlaps with the Bible. But what I find interesting, and it's the same is true when you read the New Testament Apocrypha, when you read the Nag Hammadi Library and stuff like that, what I find interesting is that these stories often have a little twist to them that all of a sudden it puts a different coloring on it or a different light on it. We're familiar with the stories and I guess you'd say their standard interpretation, but when you read the account of the same thing in the Quran, often maybe there's an important detail omitted, or one we think is important it's omitted, and some other detail added, and it gives it a completely different spin than it had in the version that we are familiar with from the Bible. This happens over and over and over and over again. If I had to say what the main theme of what we have covered so far is, almost invariably, not 100%, but way up there, in the 80s maybe, or 90s, is that God is absolutely just. If God says, look, I'm going to send out these prophets. They are going to preach monotheism. They're going to preach repentance and so forth and so on. If you guys toe the line, you'll be rewarded beyond your wildest imaginations. But if you don't, and by the way, you only get one chance. If you don't, you will be punished so severely that you will wish you had never been born. I mean, that's basically the kind of the overarching theme that you find. I thought the most telling example was with Job. Job is one of the 25 prophets. And you get to Job in the Quran. Well, you get to Job in the Bible, say. Well, Job in the Bible is this wrenching and searching discussion of the problem of evil. Job is completely virtuous and so forth, and yet he's visited with all these horrible things. And, why does God allow there to be evil? Evil things that happen to a perfectly virtuous person. And by the way, you can read Job as a challenge to the Deuteronomic propaganda, not propaganda, theme in the Deuteronomic writings, where it's pretty clear, if you're righteous, God will reward you. If you're unrighteous, God will punish you, period. Black and white. But in Job, of course, it's much more complex. And there's this whole searching thing about why God would punish somebody who's perfectly righteous. And then scholars think that the very end of Job that was tacked on because somebody didn't like the fact that it didn't have a good ending. So somebody tacks on this ending to Job saying, oh, by the way, after the whole thing was over, God rewarded Job, you know, and so forth and so on. So it all has a good ending and everything seems to line up. Well, you know, the story of Job in the Quran has zero about the problem of evil, which is like 98% of the book of Job. Has nothing on that. But if you know what it has, it has God rewarded Job because he was righteous. Why does it have that? Because that's the theme. That's the whole point of a lot of these accounts of the Old and New Testament prophets. You know, God rewards the righteous and punishes the unrighteous. So there you go. So, I mean, we've seen this over, you know, obviously with Noah, you know, and the Pharaoh with Moses, Lot and Sodom. And then you have these mysterious people, Hud and Sali, who are also identified with minor patriarchs in the Old Testament. You know, it's the same thing over and over and over again, hammered on. And, of course, you have to realize that Muhammad is this monotheistic preacher in the midst of a polytheistic society. So, of course, that's what's going on. You know, he's trying to point out to his compatriots that if you guys don't shape up, you know, this is what's going to happen. And you know good and well that a lot of the dialogue that's put into the mouths of the people whom these prophets are trying to convert are probably exactly the same things that Muhammad faced in his own life. You know, our fathers have done this for generations. Why should we do any different? Standard, you know, excuse. Another standard excuse. Well, you're just an ordinary person, you know. You didn't come down with angels and whatever. So why should we believe you? You know, that kind of thing. So those kinds of excuses are put into the mouths of the opponents of the prophets as you go along too. And I suspect, you know, that's simply a reflection of what was going on in Muhammad's own life. So we've seen this thing over and over and over again, the whole kind of theme. And we've, you know, slogged our way through 23 prophets, in which we've seen the same thing over and over. And now we're finally to Jesus, as Tom pointed out. So so we just barely started Jesus last time. Of course, Jesus is prophet number 24. He's, you know, right there before Muhammad. And so I, in my notes, I have things divided into, I have several subdivisions, right? And I have birth, humanity, disciples, crucifixion, ascension, and then schisms, because of course Muhammad's writing the 7th century, and by the 7th century in the Eastern Church there were plenty of schisms, and he would have certainly been aware of the divergence of various groups within the Christian community. And of course that says right there, well, there's something problematic with Christianity, I'm sure, from his point of view. Well, anyway, so last time all I did was I went over the birth narratives. And so there's quite a bit about Mary. Two things, I think, that, I mean, I was looking over it this morning. Two things, I think, that were striking to me. One of them was, it was just a verse, a single verse at the end of the first birth narrative, which was Surah 3, verse 60. And, I think it was the very last verse. Yeah, surely the case of Jesus with Allah is like the case of Adam. He created them. He created him out of dust, and then he said to him, "Be," and he was. The reason I thought that was striking was that it almost sounds a tiny bit Pauline. You know, how Paul treats Jesus as the new Adam, and so that the whole idea of comparing Jesus to Adam. I just thought it was maybe there's no Paul behind it at all. Maybe it's just an independent observation that, you know, but I don't know. The idea, of course, is that God created both out of sort of nothing. You know, Adam's created out of dust and Jesus is, you know, implanted in Mary's womb. And so neither came into being in the normal way. So that was one thing that was striking. The other thing that was striking was in the second one that I read. There were only three under this category. In 19, and that was really, really bizarre. It was, it starts out talking about Mary and about the birth of Jesus and all of that sort of stuff. And then she visits Elizabeth, I guess, and she brought him to her people, or just her people, maybe, but I guess her relatives is the idea. Carrying him, they said, "O Mary, thou hast brought forth a strange thing. O sister of Aaron, thy father was not a wicked man, nor was thy mother an unchaste woman." Of course, a strange thing, because here she was a virgin, and then she pointed to him. They said, "How can we talk to one who's just a child in the cradle?" And now all of a sudden, Jesus starts talking. He's like just a few days old, I guess, or something like that. Next thing you know, he says, "I am a servant of Allah. He has given me the book and made me a prophet." Okay, take that, you Christians. That's kind of the subtext here, right? Jesus, I'm just like Muhammad was going to be. I am a servant of Allah. Oh, and by the way, I am just a prophet, And he goes on. Jesus goes on, and he made me blessed of wheresoever I may be, and has enjoined upon me prayer and almsgiving so long as I live. And he has made me dutiful toward my mother, and he has not made me haughty and unblessed. And peace was on me the day I was born, and peace there will be on me to the day I shall die, and the day I shall be raised up to life again. So, that's a prefiguring of the resurrection, which is part of the orthodoxy of Islam. Such was Jesus, son of Mary, and so forth. Let me just go on. This goes all the way to... somebody needs to do something here. I hear something in the background. It does not... let's see. Such was Jesus, son of Mary. This is a statement about the truth about which they doubt. Now, the significant thing. It does not befit the majesty of Allah to take unto himself a son. Holy is he. When he decrees a thing, he says, "Be and to it be," and it is. So, by the way, this is not Jesus talking. This is God talking to Muhammad or through the prophet Gabriel. But the pointing out, just in case you missed it, it does not befit Allah to take unto himself a son. Jesus is not the Son of God. Just in case you missed it, but just in case you missed that one. Jesus pops up again. Said Jesus, "Surely Allah is my Lord and your Lord, so worship him alone. This is the right path." And then a little bit of a foreshadowing of the schisms in the church, I think. But the parties differed among themselves. So woe to those who disbelieve because of the meeting of the great day. How wonderful will be their hearing and seeing on the day when they will come to us. But today the wrongdoers are in manifest error, and warn them of the day of grief when the matter will be decided. But now they are in a state of carelessness, so they do not believe. It is we who will inherit the earth and all of their own, and to us will they all be returned. Okay. Well, anyway, so that's where we are so far. The narratives of Jesus' birth, where, as I say, number one was the interesting parallel between him and Adam, and number two is, he's such a precocious little baby, he's talking after only a few days old and, preaching about Allah. Oh, and by the way, I'm just a prophet. That's very important. And that's going to be reiterated, of course, as we go through. Okay? Any comments, questions, or anything?
Hey, Don, I don't think there was anything claimed as to why Mary was chosen. She was just somebody, right?
Yeah. Just arbitrary, well, prophets are chosen because Allah decides they'll be chosen. So Mary's no different. Okay, now we're going to go to 4. Surah 4, 172 to 173. So let me find Surah 4 for a second here. Here we go. That's 3. Here we go. Nope. Wait a minute. There's so many here that I got so many things marked. Here we go. Okay. O people of the book. And by the way, the people of the book would not just be Muslims, I think. Any people of the book. There was a story I read, I think it was in the introduction to the Hermetic writings that I have upstairs when I was reading those, and I was reading the introduction, and apparently, was it the Sabaeans? I forget, some group. When the Islamic forces came through the area, they said, are you a people of the book? And they weren't real. I mean, meaning, you know, they were neither Jews nor Christians, nor Muslims, of course. But they realized that they had to have a book. So they pulled up the Hermetic writings and they said, yes, yes, we're a people of the book. Here's our book. You know, there's the writings of Hermes Trismegistus. Well, I mean, allegedly. So they got a pass because they were a people of the book. So anyway, where was I? Oh, people of the book, exceed not the limits in your religion, and say not of Allah anything but the truth. Verily, the Messiah, Jesus, son of Mary, was only a messenger of Allah, and a fulfillment of his word, which he sent down to Mary, and a mercy from him. So believe in Allah and his messengers, and say, they are not three. Desist, it will be better for you. Verily, Allah is only one God. Far is it from his holiness that he should have a son. To him belongs whatever is in the heavens and whatever is in the earth. And sufficient is Allah as a guardian. Surely the Messiah will never disdain to be a servant of Allah, nor will the angels near unto God. And whosoever disdains to worship him and feels proud, he will gather them all to himself. Okay. So, once again, you know, Jesus is nothing but a messenger. And by the way, God is not three. And by the way, far be it from Allah to have a son. So he's not the son of God. He's not a member of the Trinity. All he is just another prophet, just a messenger. That's it.
Don, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Don?
Yes, go ahead.
Sorry. So in the Bible, we learn of some of the stories about Jesus from the disciples who were there for a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
So where, but this is several hundred years later.
Right.
So where is Muhammad, what is he basing these stories about Jesus on?
Well, we don't know exactly, of course, but we do know that there were lots of Christians around. You know, there were Christians in Mecca, and there was certainly the Aksum, which was Ethiopia, just across the Red Sea, was a Christian kingdom. Now we don't know exactly, you know, whom he was talking with or anything like that, but what this tells you is that these stories were, these variants of the stories were circulating, and then Muhammad, of course, has a vested interest in taking the story in a certain way, right? Because, I mean, you know, to his ear, and honestly, from what I've read, I would say to the ear of any Muslim today, Christianity sounds polytheistic. Yeah? The whole idea of the Trinity, you know, the three persons, you know, and the idea that God has a son. I mean, of course, I will say too, though, that what in Christian theology are really technical theological terms are interpreted in a just sort of the ordinary sense, I think, by the Muslim critics. For example, the begottenness of Jesus, you know, begotten in the Nicene Creed, you know, he's begotten, not made, you know, that whole distinction there. Well, begotten does not mean begotten in the literal sense of the word. It means it's a timeless relationship within the Trinity. Is what it refers to, just as the procession of the Holy Spirit is another timeless relationship within the Trinity. But, you know, if you're a critic, you would take it literally in the ordinary sense and say, well, you know, God's going out begetting children? Come on, that's inconsistent with our concept of God, and it's inconsistent with our concept of God that God would have a son or anything like that. So, I mean, well, I don't know. I'm kind of rambling in my answer to your question. The answer is we don't know precisely where these stories came from, but we do know from our many, many indications so far that all these stories have variants, and he's relying on a certain set of variants. And he will certainly, I guess, maybe even pick and choose among the variants of which are the ones, you know, support the main point he's trying to get across, which is this monotheistic idea.
Muhammad claimed that the stories were dictated to him from...
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, I knew that.
He was a scribe from Scuttlebutt.
Exactly. But I'm speaking as a scholar. I mean, I'm speaking like the scholars. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about what historically probably was the case. I mean, he was familiar with these stories and just indicates, as I said, there are variants in the stories, just as there are if you look at the New Testament Apocrypha or the Nag Hammadi Library. Yeah, I know what he said, but, you know, that's different. Bonnie, did I answer your question at all, or?
Yes, you did.
Okay. All righty, so let's see now. Where am I now? Oh, yeah, we're 5, 18, okay, 5. Got to find that one first. Surah 5, 18, wait a minute now. Here we are. 18 through 19 is the first. There are several in Surah 5. 18 through 19. They have indeed disbelieved who say, surely Allah is none but the Messiah, son of Mary. Say, who then has any power against Allah if he desired to bring to naught the Messiah, son of Mary, and his mother and all those that are in the earth? In other words, Jesus is not Allah. Jesus is not God. If God wanted to do that, he could just wipe Jesus out. And to Allah belongs the kingdom of the heavens and the earth and what is between them. He creates what he pleases, and Allah has the power to do all things. The Jews and the Christians say, we are sons of Allah and his loved ones. Say, why then does he punish you for your sins? Nay, you are only human beings among those he has created. He forgives whom he pleases and punishes whom he pleases. And to Allah belongs the kingdom of the heavens and the earth and what is between them, and to him shall be the return. This is interesting too, actually, the next verse, which I don't have in my notes, but it keeps on going. O people of the book, there has come to you our messenger after a break in the series of messengers, who makes things clear to you, lest you say, there has come unto us no bearer of glad tidings and no warner. So a bearer of glad tidings and a warner has indeed come to you, and Allah has power to do all things. So in other words, there's a big gap, you know, between Jesus and Muhammad. That's the implication there. Next one is 73-83. Indeed, they are disbelievers who say, surely Allah is none but the Messiah, son of Mary, whereas the Messiah himself said, this is a quote supposedly from Jesus, O children of Israel, worship Allah, who is my Lord and your Lord. Surely, end of quote, surely whoso associates partners with Allah, him has Allah forbidden heaven, and the fire will be his resort, and the wrongdoers shall have no helpers. So there are no partners with Allah. There's no Son, there's no Holy Spirit or anything like that. They are surely disbelievers who say Allah is the third of three. Okay. And there is no God but the one God. And if they do not desist from what they say, a grievous punishment shall surely befall those of them that disbelieve. So if you believe in the Trinity, you're basically a disbeliever. Why? Because you're a polytheist. You're just like all these other people in the, you know, they had up, set up idols in the Kaaba. That Muhammad is preaching against. You're no different from them. Maybe you just have three gods as opposed to more than three, but still it's more than one. Will they not then turn to Allah and beg his forgiveness? Well, Allah is most forgiving, merciful. The Messiah, son of Mary, was only a messenger. Surely messengers like unto him had indeed passed away before him, and his mother was a truthful woman. They both used to eat food. See how we explain the signs for their good, and see how they are turned away. Say, will you worship beside Allah that which has no power to do harm or you harm or good? And it is Allah who is all-hearing, all-knowing. Say, O people of the book, exceed not the limits in the matter of your religion unjustly, nor follow the evil inclinations of a people who went astray before and caused many to go astray, and who have strayed away from the right path. I guess that's a reference to the Hebrews, right? They strayed many, many times. And so, you know, you guys are doing the same thing as the, you know, not your forebears, but the people on whom you succeeded. Those amongst the children of Israel who disbelieved were cursed by the tongue of David and of Jesus, son of Mary. That was because they disobeyed and used to transgress. They did not prohibit one another from the iniquity which they committed. Evil indeed was that which they used to do. Thou shalt see many of them taking the disbelievers as their friends. Surely evil is that which they themselves have set on before for themselves, with the result that Allah is displeased with them, and in this punishment they shall abide. And if they had believed in Allah and His Prophet and in that which had been revealed to Him, they would not have taken them as their friends, but many of them are disobedient. Thou shalt certainly find the Jews and those who associate partners with God, i.e. the Christians, to be the most vehement of men in enmity against the believers, i.e. the Muslims. And thou shalt assuredly find those who say, we are Christians, to be the nearest of them in love to the believers. That is because amongst them are savants and monks, and because they are not proud. So some are okay, some are not okay, but they're all wrong. Their theology, at least, is wrong. A lot of this. This is all in Surah 5, by the way. A lot of this stuff. There's another 110 to 121 in the same Surah 5. So there's a lot of stuff in here about Christianity.
May I interject a question?
Yeah, sure.
So Jesus is called a prophet, but he's also in the Quran. You read he's called a Messiah.
Right.
So how is the Quran distinguishing a Messiah from a mere prophet?
Oh, I don't know that there is a distinction. It's just that, you know, all the prophets have unique characteristics. They're all individuals. And so Jesus is the promised one, you know, and so he's the anointed one, the one who was predicted and so forth. And that. So what? That doesn't make him God, just makes him a prophet.
Well, what's he going to do that's special that makes him the Messiah in the eyes of Islam?
I mean, he
already did the miracle speaking baby.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's really good prophet. Yeah.
I mean, is that really it? He's like a senior priest instead of a priest?
I think something like that. I really think it's a matter of degree. Yeah. I mean, clearly Moses is, you know, we have 25 prophets. And by the way, as I've said many times, it doesn't mean that there can't be other prophets. It just means this is like the official, the official list or the main prophets, supposedly. But even among the main prophets, there's a hierarchy there. I mean, clearly. I mean, all you have to do is look and you see, for example, that remember when we went over, Elijah? There was one story on Elijah about, you know, the Elijah and the prophets of Baal. And then Elisha, there is nothing. I mean, there's mention. Remember, some of the prophets are listed only in lists along with other prophets, but there is no section that's devoted to stories about them. And Elisha is one of those, you know, the verse will say, and remember, we sent down Noah and Abraham and Ishmael and Elijah and Elisha to disbelieving people or something like that, you know, just a list. So within this 25 super prophet, you know, group, there's still a gradation, right? Elisha is not is not up there. Moses clearly is way up there. Noah, maybe not quite as much as Moses, but Moses way up there. I guess Jesus is even up there farther, you know. And Muhammad, of course, is at the top. So that's how I would take the word Messiah. Just as, you know, he's really special, but that doesn't mean he's God. That's the point. Anything else? Okay, still in Surah 5. 110 to 121. Think of the day when Allah will assemble the messengers and say, "What reply was made to you?" They will say, "We have no knowledge. It is only thou who art the knower of hidden things." Yeah. When Allah will say, "O Jesus, son of Mary, remember my favor upon thee and upon thy mother when I strengthened thee with the spirit of holiness so that thou didst speak to the people in the cradle," of course we've seen that, "and in the middle age, and when I taught thee the book and the wisdom, the book and wisdom and the Torah and the gospel, and when thou didst fashion a creation out of clay in the likeness of a bird by my command." That was in previous one too that we read last week. I forgot about mentioning that. "Then thou didst breathe into it a new spirit, and it became a soaring being by my command." And so that, remember I remarked at the time, that seems to be a conflation of Jesus' baptism, where the Holy Spirit appears as a dove, and then Jesus, not long before his crucifixion, you know, saying, "I'm going to send a comforter," and that's why, and he breathes the Spirit into his disciples. That little snippet, and we, as I said, we saw it again before last week, that seems to be a conflation of those two stories and a weird take on it. He fashioned a bird out of clay and breathed into it a new spirit.
I'm sorry, Don?
Yeah.
Hello, Don?
Yeah.
There's actually an apocryphal gospel that has Jesus making clay pigeons when he's a kid.
Oh, okay. Well, then, okay.
That might be a closer link.
The proto evangelion or whatever it is.
Which one it is.
That could be. That could.
Yeah, I think it's the infancy gospel of Thomas.
Yeah, okay.
And it's not the infancy of Thomas himself. It's the infancy of Jesus.
Right.
And you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
He's making clay birds on the Sabbath, and he gets in trouble for it because you're not supposed to do that sort of thing on the Sabbath. And he says, you know, zap, and they fly away. He says, "Me? I didn't make anything on the Sabbath. See?" And off they go.
Yeah. So, I mean, so then there is other extant warrant for this variant of the story. But once again, it does seem to be sort of a conflation of the other things that we find in the Bible. It's in the book of John, actually. And then he goes on, "And thou didst heal the night blind and the leprous by my command." So, I mean, the various healing miracles are here. "And when thou didst raise the dead by my command," i.e. Lazarus, "and when I restrained the children of Israel from putting thee to death, when thou didst come to them with clear signs, and those who disbelieved from among them said, 'This is nothing but clear deception.' And when I inspired the disciples of Jesus to believe in me and in my messenger, they said, 'We believe and bear thou witness that we have submitted.' When the disciples said, 'O Jesus, son of Mary, is thy Lord able to send down to us a table spread with food from heaven?' He said, 'Fear Allah if you are believers.'" How far am I going here? 121. Okay, right. "They said, 'We desire that we may eat of it, and that our hearts be at rest, and that we may know that thou hast spoken the truth to us, and that we may be witnesses there too. Said Jesus, son of Mary, 'O Allah, our Lord, send down to us a table from heaven spread with food, that it may be to us a festival, to the first of us and to the last of us, and a sign from thee, and provide sustenance for us, for thou art the best of sustainers. Allah said, surely I will send it down to you, but whosoever of you disbelieves afterwards, I will surely punish them with a punishment wherewith I will not punish any of the other peoples. And when Allah will say, O Jesus, son of Mary, didst thou say to men, take me and my mother for two gods besides Allah? He will answer, holy art thou, I could never say that to which I had no right. If I had said it, thou wouldst surely have known it. Thou knowest what is in my mind, and I know not what is in thy mind. It is only thou who art the knower of hidden things. I said nothing to them except that which thou didst command me. Quote, worship Allah, my Lord and your Lord, end quote. And I was a witness over them as long as I remained among them. But since thou didst cause me to die, thou hast been the watcher over them, and thou art witnessed over all things. If thou punish them, they are thy servants, and if thou forgive them, they surely art the mighty, the wise. End quote. Allah will say, this is a day when only the truthful shall profit by their truthfulness. For them are gardens beneath which streams flow. Therein shall they abide forever. Allah is well pleased with them, and they are well pleased with him. That indeed is the great triumph. To Allah belongs the kingdom of the heavens and the earth and whatever is in them, and he has power over all things. So once again, very unequivocally, Allah is saying, now wait a minute. Did you preach, you know, tritheism there? Me, you, and your mother? That's an interesting version, but anyway. Yeah, me, you, and your mother. Jesus said, no, I didn't do that. You know all things. All I preached was what you told me. Fear Allah alone. So once again, driving home the point, just in case you missed it before. Alrighty. 6:163 and 164. Say, my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. He has no partner. And so am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. So that's an allusion, at least, to Jesus. And 9:30-34. And the Jews say, Ezra is the son of Allah. And the Christians say, the Messiah is the son of Allah. That is what they say with their mouths. They imitate the saying of those who disbelieve before them. Allah's curse be on them. How are they turned away? They have taken their learned men and their monks for lords besides Allah, and so have they taken the Messiah, son of Mary. And they were not commanded but to worship the one God. There is no God but He. Too holy is He for what they associate with Him. In other words, that would degrade the majesty of Allah to associate any other gods with Him besides Allah Himself, right? They desire to extinguish the light of Allah with their mouths, but Allah will permit nothing except that He will perfect His light, though the disbelievers may dislike it. He it is who sent His messenger with guidance and the religion of truth, that He may make it prevail over every other religion, even though the idolaters may dislike it. O ye who believe, surely many of the priests and monks devour the wealth of men by false means and turn men away from the way of Allah. And those who hoard up gold and silver and spend it not in the way of Allah, give to them the tidings of a painful punishment. So I guess some of the monks are pretty good, but some are not so good. Okay. That was 9. All right, yeah. And let's see, 18:33-45. Okay. And set forth to them the parable of two men. One of them we provided with two gardens of grapes and surrounded them with date palms, and between the two we placed cornfields. Each of the gardens yielded its fruit in abundance and failed not the least therein, and between the two we caused the stream to flow. Okay. And he had fruit in abundance, and he said to his companion, arguing boastfully with him, I am richer than thou in wealth and stronger in respect of men. Oh, let's see. I do have this marked, don't I? 18. Okay. I'm just going by what I have marked. And he had fruit in abundance. Yeah, all right. And he entered his garden while he was wronging his soul. He said, I do not think this will ever perish. And I do not think the hour will ever come. And even if I am ever brought back to my Lord, I shall surely find a better resort than this. His companion said to him while he was arguing with him, dost thou disbelieve in him who created thee from dust, then from a sperm drop, and then fashioned thee into be a perfect man? But as for me, I believe that Allah alone is my Lord, and I will not associate with anyone with my Lord. And why dost thou not say when thou didst enter thy garden, only that which Allah wills comes to pass? There is no power save in Allah. If thou seest me as less than thee in riches and offspring, perhaps that my Lord will give me something better than thy garden, and will send on it, thy garden, a thunderbolt from heaven, so that it will become a bare, slippery ground, or its water will become sunk in the earth, so that thou wilt not be able to find it. And his fruit was actually destroyed, and he began to wring his hands for what he had spit on it, and it had all fallen down in its trellises. And he said, would that I had not associated anyone with my Lord. Oh, yes, so that's, okay, now I'm understanding why I did this. And he had no party to help him against Allah, nor was he able to defend himself. In such a case, protection comes only from Allah, the true. He is the best in respect of reward and the best in respect of consequence. So this is a little parable, I guess, a parable of somebody associating somebody else with Allah. So that's why I had that marked. The last one is 1989 through 93. Here we go. And they say the gracious God has taken. They say the gracious God has taken unto himself a son. Assuredly, you have done a most monstrous thing. The heavens might well nigh burst thereat, and the earth cleave asunder, and the mountains fall down in pieces, because they ascribe a son to the gracious God, whereas it becomes not the gracious God to take unto himself a son. So, these selections that I've been reading then are all, sort of the unifying theme throughout is this constant inveighing against the idea of the Son of God, which, and by implication, then the doctrine of the Trinity. All righty. Any questions?
May I ask a minor language question?
Oh, sure.
So Jesus says a Jew and whatever would not have used the word Allah. So. Correct?
Wait a minute. Where was that? That was...
In the Old Testament, there's all this discussion about what is the name of God,
right,
and all that.
Right.
And, you know, I guess the writer of the Quran is just translating Allah for whatever Jesus would have used when talking about God.
Oh, well, that's true, yes. I'm not sure what you're referring to, though. I mean, you've heard back where it says, and the Jews say Ezra is the son of Allah, and the Christians say the Messiah is the son of Allah? That's a little different.
Well, what I interpret you say is, you know, Jesus was saying there is only one, you know, praise Allah, and, you know, that
right.
He would have called God Allah.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Well, yeah, you can call Allah God if you want. I mean, you can with a capital G. That's okay.
No, but I meant the Jews wouldn't have used the term Allah, right?
Well, that's true, although... Muhammad, of course, is putting in the mouth of all these people. I mean, you're talking, yes, in the Bible, that is certainly the case. And, in fact, God doesn't even have a name, right? But we've seen all along that the Quran is putting into the mouths of all these people, Noah, right, Moses, all these people. You know, Allah is the only God, and Jesus is saying the same thing. So, yeah. So basically what Muhammad is saying is the accounts you read are just not accurate. You know, this is what's really accurate. They were talking about Allah.
Yeah, so they faithfully could have told the story in the Quran with just the substitution of the name.
Yeah. Yeah. True. Yeah. I mean, Allah, you know, let's see, is Tammy on? Because I think Allah, I don't see Tammy.
He can hear.
Oh, okay. I, you know, El is the Hebrew word for God. And I suspect that Allah is etymologically related to El. So for that reason, it's appropriate, if you want, to translate it as God. So would Tammy agree with that?
Tam?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume the same thing. I can't say that for sure, but that would be my understanding.
Okay, yeah. So.
But you've... in at least in the English translation, there have been many times where Allah and then God are in the same sentence and theoretically is different words.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I have a similar question going on here. There was Tom's thing about, you know, in the Hebrew Bible, and there was a stricture against using the name of God out loud. Mm-hmm. And so that seems to be at odds. But there's also this other thing with the strict monotheism.
Mm-hmm.
Names are used to distinguish between members of a group in one way of looking at names. And to give God a name when he's the only member of that particular, you know, group one, seems that having a name is kind of admitting to the polytheist that he's attempting to preach against. And I was kind of curious from that perspective, why would God even have a name if you were a super strict monotheist?
I see what you're saying. I think you're. I want to answer two questions because you kind of, in a way, asked another question a little bit earlier. There's certainly nothing impossible when you said, and you're right. There, I can't put my finger, of course, but I do remember also, you know, Allah and then God being the word God being used, which probably would be a different word. But of course, it's certainly possible that does not mean that Allah is not etymologically related to El.
No, you know. Yeah, right.
Yeah. But back to your other question, your main question. Remember, Allah was part of the pantheon of Mecca. In fact, Allah was the chief god. So, you know, part of what he's doing, you know, when the Christians took the Saturnalia and made it Christmas, you know, and that sort of thing, you know, you're not entirely wiping out what came before. You're sort of using it to further your own goals, really. I mean, it's apparently a fairly common pattern because we find the same kind of things in Christianity. So, I mean, I think literally that's the reason he uses. It's as if a Greek had come along and said, there is no God but Zeus, you know, which, in fact, some of the Greeks did sort of say that. Well, of course, you're not going to make up another name, or you're not going to just say, well, now I'm, as Plotinus would later say, you know, well, there is no name that really belongs to God. But that's a rather sophisticated idea. And I guess if you're you know, trying to convince your fellow Meccans that there is only one God, it's probably advantageous to use the name of the chief God to refer to that one God. That's my guess.
Anyway, okay.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, if you really think it through theologically, maybe you would want to say, yeah, we can't say anything, but he's got other goals here. He's trying to kind of convert a hostile population. Okay, the disciples, 61, Surah 61, verse 15. That's how I labeled this anyway. O ye who believe, be helpers of Allah, as said Jesus, son of Mary, to his disciples. Who are my helpers in the cause of Allah? The disciples said, we are helpers of Allah. So a party of the children of Israel believed, while a party disbelieved. Then we gave power to those who believed against their enemy, and they became victorious. That's kind of going over other ones that we've seen, but that one's just about the disciples. Now the crucifixion. Surah 4, 157 to 160. Surah 4. Surah 4. Here we go. Okay. 160. I just want to see where I'm going here. Okay, I'm going to there. And because of their disbelief and their uttering against Mary a grievous calumny, and they're saying, we did kill the Messiah, Jesus, son of Mary, the messenger of Allah, whereas they slew him not, nor crucified him, but he was made to appear to them like one crucified, and those who differ therein are certainly in a state of doubt about it. And they have no definite knowledge thereof, but only follow a conjecture, and they did not convert this conjecture into a certainty. On the contrary, Allah exalted him to himself, and Allah is mighty, wise. And there is none among the people of the book but will believe in it before his death, and on the day of resurrection, he, Jesus, shall be a witness against them. Okay, so this is a bit of Docetism, right? I mean, the Docetic heresy was the idea that Jesus only appeared to suffer, right? He was really just, the Christian Docetic heresy was that Jesus was really just divine, and so God can't suffer, but he put on this big show and appeared to suffer and to die and so forth, but he really didn't. But it does have that, although Muhammad is certainly not saying Jesus is divine, it does have in common with the Docetic heresy this idea that he really really wasn't crucified, really didn't even die, at least in that fashion. So that's all just a sort of a Christian myth, and it's, you know, part of the way in which they went astray. And then 2351, let's see, I have that marked as ascension. Here we go. And we made the son of Mary and his mother a sign and gave them refuge on an elevated land of green valleys and springs of running water. Now, I label that ascension. I'm not sure if that's exactly the same, but sort of the same. And it's, you know, there's this idea of Mary also being transported to heaven. And then we gave them refuge on an elevated land of green valleys and springs of running water. And then the last category is schisms. And we've seen this already.
So Jesus was alive when he was ascended.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, that's the way this post-resurrection of the Christian tradition, but he was alive then too. But it's certainly a different take on it. Surah 2, verse 254. These messengers have exalted some of them above others. Among them there are those to whom Allah spoke, and some of them he exalted by degrees of rank. And we gave Jesus, son of Mary, clear proofs and strengthened him with the spirit of holiness. And if Allah had so willed, those that came after them would not have fought with one another after clear signs came to them. But they did disagree. Of them were some who believed, and of them were some who disbelieved. And if Allah had so willed, they would not have fought with one another. But Allah does what he desires. By the way, later on, when we get to the question of predestination, this particular verse is kind of suggests that. 6:160. So it's referring to the controversies within Christianity, and of course, by the 7th century, I mean, there was plenty to talk about if you were observing all this from afar. 6:160. As for those who split up their religion and became divided into sects, thou hast no concern at all with them. Surely their case will come before Allah, then will he inform them of what they used to do. Okay. And finally, 43:58 through 68. we go. 58. Okay, here we go. And when the son of Mary is mentioned as an instance, lo, thy people raise a clamor threat. A clamor thereat. And they say, are our gods better or he? They mention not this to thee, but for the sake of disputation. Nay, but they are a contentious people. He was only our servant on whom we bestowed our favor, and we made him an example for the children of Israel. And if we had so willed, we could make from among you angels in the earth to be successors therein. But verily, he was a sign of the hour. So, have no doubt about it, but follow me. This is the right path. And let not Satan hinder you. Surely he is to you an open enemy. And when Jesus came with clear proofs, he said, truly I am come to you with wisdom and to make clear to you some of that about which you differ. So fear Allah and obey me. Verily Allah, he is my Lord and your Lord, so worship him. This is the right path. But the parties differed among themselves. So woe to the wrongdoers because of the punishment of a grievous day. They wait not but for the hour to come suddenly upon them while they perceive it not. Friends on that day will be foes of each other except the righteous. So once again, I think that's a sort of a reference to the various branches that had broken off from one another by the time you get to the 7th century. And that's just proof in Muhammad's eyes that Christianity is deeply flawed because of the schisms. That's from Muhammad's point of view. Now, that's not to say that Islam, the same thing didn't happen, but of course he couldn't foresee that. So we're done with prophet number 24, who is Jesus. And so next week we will start with Muhammad, prophet number 25. And when we're done with that, then we'll pick up some other threads, like the one about the laws, and then the question, exactly what are we talking about? What is the theology here? Is it, you know, is it justification by faith alone, or is there predestination going on? I mean, we'll talk about all that later on. So that's what's up in the ensuing weeks. We're out of time. See you all next week. Bye-bye.